Om Vishwam Darpana Drishyamana Nagari Tulyan Nijantara Gatam Pashyan Atmani Mayaya Bahirivod Gutam Yatha Nidraya Yasakshat Kurute Prabodha Samaye Swatmana Mevadvayam Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye Vijasyantarivankaro jagatidam pranamirvikalpam punaha Maya kalpita desha kala kalana vaichitri chitri kritam Maya viva vijrimpayatyapi mahayogi vayasvechaya Tasmai shri guru murtaye namahidam shri dakshina murtaye Yasyaiva spuranam sadatmakam asatkalpartakam bhasate Sakshat tattvamasiti vedavachasa yobodhiyatyashritan Yat sakshat karanat bhavena punaravrittir bhavampo nidau Tasmai shri guru murtaye namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye Nana Chitra Gato Darastita Mahadipa Prabhapaswaram Jnanam Yasya Chachiradi Karana Dwara Bahispandate Jana Medita Meva Bhanta Manubhatye Tatsamastam Jagata Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye Deham Pranam Apindriyanya Pichalam Buddhim Chasunyam Viduhu Shri Balanda Jadopamastu Hamti Pranta Prasham Vadinaha Maya Shakti Vilasa Kalpita Mahavya Moha Samharine Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Okay. Got it. Repeat after me.
Rahu Grasta Divakarendu Sadrishaha. Rahu Grasta Divakarendu Sadrishaha. Maya Samachadana. Maya Samachadana. San Matra Karano Pasam Haranato. San Matra Karano Pasam Haranato. Yo Bhut Sushupta Puman. Yo Bhut Sushupta Puman. Pragaswap Samiti Prabodha Samaye. Pragaswap Samiti Prabodha Samaye. Yav Pratya Bignayate. Yav Pratya Bignayate. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye
Let's do the Sunday.
Rahu Grasta. So Rahu Grasta means an eclipse. Rahu Grasta. Divakara Indu Sadrishaha Maya Samachadanat San Matraha Sat. Right, Sat becomes Sun. Sat, Sat Matraha San Matraha Karana Upasam Haranataha Yaha Abhut Sushuptaha Puman Prak Aswapsam Iti Prabodha Samaye Yaha Prachabhignayate Timtasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namaha Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. You know, in astrology, Rahu Ketu, Rahu Grasta is being swallowed, that which is swallowed by Rahu.
It means an eclipse. Mm. So the Rahu Grasta, Divakara means that which makes the day. Right? Diva is day, Divakara. So Divakara, that the day maker, the sun. And Indu means the moon. So the sun and the moon. Sadrishaha means like. So that which is like the sun, the eclipse of the sun or the moon. The sun or the moon eclipsed. Rahu Grasta Diva, Divakara, or Rahu Grasta Indu. Sadrishaha.
So either one?
Yeah. They're usually not both eclipsed at the same time, right? So we would say va instead of cha. So like the sun or the moon eclipsed in an eclipse. Rahu Grasta Divakara Indu Sadrishaha. Maya Samachadanat. That which is completely covered. Achadana means to cover over. Okay, that which is completely from the covering of, literally, it's fifth case, from the complete covering of Maya, by due to Maya. You'd say by the complete covering of Maya with a gerund like that. These ana affixes, which make for neuter nouns, they will take the genitive of either the karta or the karma. So the karta means the doer of the action. The karma means the result of the action. So here it would be from the covering of Maya. Maya is the karta. Maya is the one that does the covering. So you'd put it, the Maya, in the genitive case, right? So from the covering of, and the sum means that complete covering. It adds emphasis. So from the complete covering of Maya.
Maya is in genitive here?
If you break the, yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that if you have one of these gerunds, these ana affixes, which would mean like the covering, right? Or gamana would be the going, like that.
Right, I just didn't recognize the genitive case.
Oh, it's a compound. When you break the compound, you have to add the genitive.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, okay. But there's no ending there at all, yeah.
Okay,
so, mayasama chadanat, fifth case, ablative. Then, san matraha. Sun matraha means existence or being alone. The matraha, when you put the matraha on something, it means it's that, solely that. Just being alone. Sun matraha in the nominative singular. Karana upasam haranataha. That taha affix gives the sense of the fifth case, indeclinable affix, and it means upasam harana means for something to really withdraw into itself, is the idea. So from the withdrawing of the karanas are the sense organs, okay? Because of the withdrawing, that's again that ana affix that shows a gerund, from the withdrawing of the karanas of the sense organs, yaha, he who, abhut. This is like an aorist, he who was, Shushuptaha, slept. We're not going to really translate that. Abhut, I'll tell you in a minute. He who slept, Shushuptaha, past passive participle. He who Shushuptaha slept, Puman. Puman is referring to the Atma, to the self, the person. Puman in the nominative singular. So, from Puman, I think Puman is like Puman is. In the nominative singular, but what's the root? Shreyan, Pumas, must be. You know, like Shreya, Shreyan. Sorry. I didn't realize I didn't know that, so let me look it up. Look. gosh, I wonder if I have a typo on top of it. It is long. Sorry, just hang on for a minute. I'll be right with you. I'm sorry. Let's just see.
I'm going to get some chai.
We never know since origin from the throne who was left.
All right, I'll make a note of this, okay?
Can you run that second sentence by us again?
I haven't put it together yet. I'm just giving you some...
Okay.
Basically the words. Yaha, he who, abut, aorist, was, from is, from asti, is. Shushuptaha, past passive participle, slept. Puman, nominative singular, for the self, the person. Prak, aswapsam. Pre-prak is before. Aswapsam is past tense. I slept, right? Aswapsam. I slept. Previously, I slept. I was asleep. I was asleep, prak, before aswapsam. Iti. Puts in quotes, prak, aswapsam. I slept. I was asleep. Okay. Prabodha samaye. At the time, samaya. At the time of waking up, prabodha. At the time of waking up, prabodha samaye. Prak, aswapsam, iti. I slept. Yaha. I slept. Yaha, he who pratyabhijñāyate, he who recalls, he who remembers. This pratyabhijñā I'm going to talk about, that's a technical term that we've talked about before. I want to make sure that we get with it.
Self-recollection?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It means self-recollection. Like if I said, I remember that painting, that's not a pratyabhijñā. Pratyabhijñā is means I remember. I was the one who slept is the one who is awake now. And so it's a self-recollection as opposed to the recollection of an object, mm-hmm. something that is, you know, you don't identify. So he who self-recollects at the time of waking, I slept. I was asleep. I was just asleep. I was asleep previously. Okay? Then tasmai Sri Guru Murtaye, etc. So let's put this together. Let me tell you kind of the vigraha, means the way this is broken up in the bhasha, just because it makes it kind of easier. It says, the person who, the puman, which is going to be the puman atma, you know, the self, so tasmai namaha, salutations to him, right? To him, and who is that him? The person who recollects that I slept. Okay? And it says, salutation to the person, that one who, like the sun or the moon, is covered. Recollects as a pratyabhijna that I slept. Okay? So far, so good. Then he says, the yaha, puman, the puman refers to the self, puman atma, yaha puman atma, the self who, right? Yaha puman, the self who. Then karana upasamharanataha means here, upasamharanata means from the, you know, withdrawal of, because of, due to, the withdrawal of the indriyas, of the sense organs, okay? So then he says, because of the laya, laya means that, you know, complete withdrawal. Because of the laya, the withdrawal into the self of the sense organs, which are responsible for giving what we call vishesha jnanam, particular knowledge. Vishesha jnanam means particular knowledge. Vishesha means knowledge, like vijnanam. Vijnanam, if you say jnanam, it just means knowledge. Vijnanam can mean itself, vishesha jnanam, means particular knowledge. So the sense organs are responsible for allowing you to differentiate, you know, this, 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 and this. So the sense organs themselves are responsible for particular knowledge. When those sense organs are withdrawn, okay, so due to the withdrawal of the sense organs, which is this, karana upasam haranata, then what? He says, shushuptaha abhut, means vishesha vijnana rahitaha abhut. I am now without Rahitaha means without. I now am there without any vishesha jnana, without any differentiated knowledge. So, from the standpoint of the one who has gone, I'm just reading the Bhashya here, from the standpoint of the one who has gone to sleep because of the withdrawal of the sense organs, at that time, that one who has gone to sleep is not knowing anything. When they're not knowing anything, then I simply am, without any subject-object differentiation. That's the sanmatraha. From the withdrawal of the sense organs, there is no vishesha jnana. There is no differentiated knowledge. So that means there's no subject-object relationship. And so at that time, I simply am without knowing anything. Okay. So here, when he says, sanmatraha, simply being, that one who is simply being, because of the karana upasamharanataha, because of the withdrawal of the sense organs, okay, that person, that one, the one who is asleep, sushuptaha, simply being, now simply being, the one who is asleep is just simply being, sanmatraha, because of the withdrawal of the sense organs, there's no vishesha jnana. That person, prak aswapsam iti, prabodhasamaye, yaha pratyabhijñayate, that person is the one who recollects at the time of awakening, prabodhasamaye, at the time of awakening, he who recollects, the one who recollects, in what form? Prak aswapsam, oh, I was asleep. I, the pratyabhijña means the one who is awake now recollects, I was asleep. The pratyabhijña is the self-reflection that the one who is awake now, this one is awake now, this one was the one who is asleep. That's the pratyabhijña. So it has the self-recollection at the time of awakening, prakaswapsam, that I slept. Okay. So salutations to him. Okay, let's put the whole thing together. Rahu grasta diva karendu sadrishaha. Okay. Just like the Divakara, the sun and the Indu moon, Rahu Grasta, being eclipsed, being swallowed by Rahu. Maya Samachadanat, from being covered by Maya, right? From the covering of Maya, due to the covering of Maya. Sanmatraha, simply being Sanmatraha. Karana upasamharanataha, from the withdrawal of the sense organs, that atma, that self, who slept, the self who slept, because of the withdrawal of the sense organs, which brings about a complete covering by Maya, right? When the sense organs are withdrawn, he's just there, being with the Maya, totally in the avyakta condition, okay? Like the sun and the moon, being eaten by the Rahu, that person who slept upon awakening is the one who says, who recalls, I slept. So the one who slept upon awakening recalls, is the one who recalls, I slept. Salutations to him. Now, the thing is, the one who slept recalls, the one who was awake recalls, I slept. The only constant between those two states is the Atma. That's the point. Because the one who goes to sleep, the one who's withdrawn in that unmanifest condition is not present. The one who's in the unmanifest condition is not present to say, you know, I was there. So the only one that was there, who's awake there, present, to have that type of pratyabhijna is the self. So the mind has to say, I, the one who is present in sleep, is the one who is present now. See what I mean? Because otherwise, the one who is actually in unmanifest condition isn't available for that recollection, or available for that pratyabhijna, because in unmanifest condition. The self is the only thing that's available.
And the memory comes from the mind?
The memory the memory, any type of memory is going to come from the mind, whether it's the memory of something external or the memory of something or that objective condition. That condition is the one that's being recalled. So I was in that condition. The one who was in that condition is the one who is present now. The knower was not present. The knower was not present in the objecta, in the deep sleep condition. You understand that? The knower was not present in the deep sleep condition. The knower was only present in the waking condition. But the Atma is present in both conditions.
So this is like verse 11 of Dwaita
Nakaranda. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's exactly right.
But where does the Maya fit in, the covering? What is that specifically? Is that going to sleep?
No. In the sense that when there's the Rahu Grasta, when the sun and the moon are as though covered, but they're as though covered by the eclipse, right? The Atma is as though covered by Maya. When the sense organs and everything go into unmanifest condition, there's no shining, right? There's no knowing. And like that, when the Rahu is there, there's no shining of the sun. Even though the sun is shining, there's nothing's happening to the sun. But because of the eclipse, you know, nothing is being illumined. And so here the Atma is shining as consciousness. But when the sense organs are in unmanifest condition, everything is as though covered, eclipsed by Maya. Because without the sense organs in operation, there's no vishesha jnanam, there's no particular knowledge. And so my experience is just as being. From the standpoint, you have to take into the account, and from the standpoint of the jiva, the one who's suffering the eclipse. Atma is not suffering an eclipse. Neither is the sun or the moon, right? It has to be from the standpoint of the jiva, the one in duality, that's having that experience. Sun and moon are not having any experience whatsoever. They're illumining the eclipse, in fact. And here the Atma is illumining the Maya, which is now covering everything. It's avyakta. The Maya is just in that avyakta condition. There's no vishesha jnanam at all. There's no particular knowledge because the karanas, the mind can also be considered a karana, are all drawn into themselves. That's the upasamharata.
So the sense of shining comes from the mind then, is that right?
The sense of vishesha jnanam, knower known, right? It requires the mind. From the standpoint of the jiva, now, when the mind is in unmanifest condition, there's no subject-object relationship. There's no illumining the duality. There's nobody there illumining the duality. So from the standpoint of the jiva, there's just being without knowledge of something.
But the illumining is still going on, isn't it? By the Atma?
But you have to remember that Atma, in fact, is not performing a karma, an act of illumining something. You know, Atma just is knowledge, is consciousness. It's not consciousness of something. But within the Maya, if the mind is awake, the sense organs are awake, then there is subject-object duality, I know this, right? There's a sense of knowership. The Atma also, consciousness can never be... Consciousness and existence are one and the same thing. They're not different at all. Consciousness is existence. Existence is consciousness. But from the standpoint of the jiva, if that which is responsible for differentiation, you know, subject-object relationship, for vishesha jnanam, is not there, those things are resolved, then I simply am without the knowledge of anything, without any manifest knowledge. That's why they say, I simply am being. I'm not knowing.
So you shouldn't expect at that time this sense of illumination or illumining.
Okay.
Did you finish?
Kind of. Did I finish good enough for you?
Yeah, I guess so.
It
was subtle, so it's hard to...
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm having some trouble myself today for some reason.
Okay.
Anybody have any questions on this? You all right with it? I don't mind questions. Go ahead.
Well, it's such a mind blower every time you wake up to realize that. want to put that together.
You know what? It is shocking. Most people don't think about it. You know?
Yeah.
They don't think about the fact, even the fact that when I go into deep sleep and there is no subject-object relationship, no knowledge, no duality, just a big I don't know, that is fine with me. And I even enjoy it. You know, that deep sleep is something very, you know, nourishing. And my presence without any ahankara, without any I notion, without any subject-object relationship is something that we enjoy. But you can think about it like this too. Meditation. For people who have a meditative practice, what do we really love? Is to go into deep absorption where there is no really experience of duality at all. Even when, and slightly tangential to that, even say when you're walking in nature or those moments when there is, even on a deep level, no desire for anything to be different. That's non-dual in the sense that there's no difference. If you have knowledge, it's non-dual, where there's, you just see everything as Ishwara. Everything in the experience is Ishwara. You know, the jiva, the ahankara kind of disappears in that experience. And so we like that. We think of it, somebody might think, well, I'm erasing myself in that experience. Well, you're erasing the ahankara, you're erasing the ajnana, and just abiding in the wholeness of what is. It's the same. In deep sleep, it's like the ignorant person samadhi, you know, lazy man samadhi, as Swamiji said, in deep sleep, you know. We get to have it every night, you know, where there is no subject-object relationship. Just me, just my being, I simply am, without any obstruction. In nirvikalpa samadhi, I simply am, not even with ajnanam there, because the mind is awake and resolved.
So when you observe the mind into the self, do you expect the self to say, I'm shining, or I'm illumining, or does that sense, is that removed?
Those words are removed and the words are irrelevant. Just like for you, whether you have knowledge or not, when you're walking around engaged in the world, doing whatever you do, you're doing just being, you don't have a need to keep saying, I am looking or I am walking. It's a given, right? It's assimilated knowledge. The word, it's automatic.
Or even I am, I am, I am.
Yeah, I am, I am, I am. It's absolutely not required. The words aren't required to establish your sense of being. Because your sense of being, the self that you are, is self-evident. It illumines the words. It doesn't require the words. You know, and even in a mundane level, I don't have to, when I see this, I don't have to say chair, table. It's a given, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I don't need to use the descriptors. Mm-hmm. For my own self, I don't need to use a descriptor or a label. It simply is. But what about when there is what is plus ignorance? You know, then the descriptor that I use is going to be incorrect because of the self-ignorance.
Yeah.
And so I'm describing myself as this body, or I'm describing myself as this mind, because the satyam mitya, the mind, for instance, is the self. It is the self. So it's a proper description, but it's only half description. My mind is me, but I am free of the mind. Right? That satyam mitya isn't complete. So there's that ajnanam there. So there's a false description that then I'm acting off of.
Carol, in the moment of absorption, can the mind be aware or cognizant of the absorption, or does that come later? Like, I realize now that I was absorbed in that moment.
You want to finish your question?
Yes, I'll try it the third time. Okay, so is the mind cognizant of the absorption during the absorption or only after? Like, I'm aware that I was deeply asleep. I'm aware that I was, you know, deeply absorbed in nature. I'm aware that I was deeply absorbed in meditation. Or can it be simultaneously that the mind can be cognizant of the absorption while it's happening?
Okay. In deep sleep state, there's just pure ajnana there. That's why the only experience is the experience of being without any comment on it at all. The only thing is that being itself is self-evident. So there's never going to be, in deep sleep we're talking, any kind of lapse in your sense of being. By sense of being, I mean just the self-evident being. There's never a lapse in that because there's never a lapse in it, and it's self-evident. But the mind is not having any type of, making any type of contribution. The only thing is that the vritti itself, which is in the avyakta condition, will say, in that condition, it's an ati sukshma vritti. It's a very subtle vritti. What that means is it's in totally unmanifest condition, but it's not that it isn't there. You know, that's why, because the whole mind is made of sattva, by its very nature, the sattva reflects awareness, but when the mind is in a avyakta condition, there's no type of subject-object differentiation there, there's just pure ajnana.
Okay, that's so, in deep sleep.
That's deep sleep. Now, in nirvikalpa samadhi, they make two distinctions, for savikalpa and nirvikalpa. Savikalpa samadhi is when the mind is not focused on anything other than the Atma. It's focused only on its own content. It's like the clay pot being focused only on the clay. But initially, when the mind absorbs like that and is just only focused on the sat-chit, on the self, it is still present. So it would be kind of like, an example they use is kind of like looking in a mirror where you're aware of both your reflection and the mirror. You see what I mean? But if you were to, another example they use is, if you hold a candle flame up to the sun, initially you may be able to still see the outline of the flame, even though the content flame and the content sun are one and the same. But still you have an awareness of things. So that in that sense, the mind is still present, you know, and has the sense of being in samadhi. Mm-hmm. So there's that duality there without there being a really subject-object duality, but the presence of the mirror-like mind is still cognizable. Once that savikalpa state takes place, if it's held for any length of time, it will be overwhelmed by the content. And that's nirvikalpa. At that time, there's no one saying or appreciating, I'm in. You know what I mean? There is the fact of it. Now, the difference is here is that the mind is not creating a condition of its own, like when it's in a manifest condition. Then there's awareness illumining a mind which is not focused on the subject, right? It's in unmanifest condition. And so there's awareness plus a condition of ajnanam, or pure avyakta. In nirvikalpa, there is no secondary condition of the maya. Since the mind is totally absorbed in the content of awareness. And so there now there's not awareness plus ajnanam. There's awareness plus a mind, which is like, is again, an ati sukshma. Ati means very, very subtle vritti, which is totally resolved or totally absorbed in the nature of awareness itself. And so now the experience is, there's no subject object there, but the awareness itself is self-effulgent. It is the very... It is the very knowledge, in a sense, the very consciousness that's present and pervasive to all vrittis. Right? It's not another consciousness. It's what lights up all vrittis, all experience, is that self-evident consciousness. And so now the mind is totally absorbed in that self-evident consciousness. And so now you have self-evident consciousness illumining a vritti which itself is invisible. It's there, but it's invisible because it has no other content. See what I mean?
Does the mind still exist in that moment?
It always,
people
the mind,
can come back from that state, right?
So it does. That's why we say very subtle. And the mind is totally overpowered by its content. You know, because if you realize the satya-mitya relationship, I will just use the clay pot. The pot form is the mitya, means it depends upon, totally upon, the clay for its being. It really is nothing but clay. That's why what we call maya can't be categorized. That's why when we even break down, give an etymology, Vedantic etymology of maya, it's ya ma iti maya. That which is not, that is maya. So here, the pot, when you say there is no pot, of course there is a pot. That's why we have to deal with it. There is a pot, but really there's nothing there at all except for clay. But the maya allows for the pot, which has no other being other than the clay. So you can say, really, there is no pot. There's only clay there. But because there is a pot, and here we are, we're all like pots. And we're all, there's a vyavahara, there's an empirical reality. But if we try to get into what is actually here, it's only Brahman, it's only consciousness. See, that's the satyam mitya. So we would say, what is here within duality is totally dependent for its very being on consciousness, just like the pot is totally dependent for its very being, you know, on clay. But because a pot is there, or because we are all here, that's why we bring in maya. So maya is something that can't be categorized. It's a word that Swamiji is using now. It can't be categorized. You can't say that maya is real as though it has an independent being, you know. It's not sat. It has no being of its own. It doesn't have any sat. But you also can't say it's not here. Right? If you say it's not here, then what are we talking about? Then there is something here, you know. That's why for bondage and liberation, bondage, liberation, all of these things all are only within the context of maya. From the standpoint of awareness, there is no problem at all. The problem exists here for all of these elements of maya, within maya. But when you analyze maya, there really is nothing here but Brahman, but the self. And so now that's going to be true of your relationship, the mind's relationship with awareness. It's not like there is, in terms of being or substance, the mind and awareness, right? That then we would have two things. We would have a mind and awareness. But in terms of substance or actuality, the truth of the mind is awareness. And that's why I can say, I am my mind, right? Because I am my mind. If I'm a jnani, I can say, no, exactly what I'm talking about, I can say, I am the mind and I'm also the rug. But an ajnani can only say, one who doesn't have knowledge can only say, I am the mind. They can't say, I am the mind and the rug and you. They can't say, I am Ishvara, right? Because there's a real identity for them between I am the mind and the mind is me. Whereas for a jnani, it's that the mind is me because there is nothing else but me. But I am free of the mind, right? And so now think of that in terms of, say, nirvikalpa or savikalpa samadhi. When the mind goes into an absorption, what that means is that the mind is not engaged in other activities like sensory-based sense perceptions. It's not engaged in sense perceptions. It's not engaged in imagination or any type of thought processes. It's not engaged in any type of emotions, nothing. Its engagement is only a focus or an absorption into its own being. Right? The being which is absolutely present and pervasive to whatever experience you have. Like, what difference does it make whether I'm having my being plus sense perception? Because there's no real plus. It's satya mitya. My being is the self of sense perception. My being is the self of emotion. My being is the self of imagination. You know? My being is the self of whatever the experience happens to be. So, but in order to gain knowledge, we have to, self-knowledge, One of the things that has to be accomplished in terms of knowledge is to be able to differentiate the satyam from the mitya. Because otherwise I take the satyam, what actually is, to belong to the mitya. So the satyam, the conscious being, belongs to the mind, right? It is a product of the mind, like that. It is a quality of the mind. I take awareness to be a quality of the mind, right? And a quality of the body. And so when the body dies, awareness dies.
Yeah.
Sat-chit is a quality of the body. Sat-chit is a quality, you know, sat is a quality of this table.
So something that I have rather than something that I am.
Yeah, it's superimposed upon the mitya. And so what I need to be able to do is differentiate my presence, the satyam, from the mitya. And the way that I can do that is to recognize that which is always present, no matter what the vritti, what the experience is. Savikalpa and nirvikalpa samadhi is helpful in that process because I bring to a cessation all of the activities of the mind, all of the perceptual activities, imaginal activities, thought flow, all of that, and focus the mind only on the luminary, on the conscious being. And then what I recognize is, oh, that conscious being which exists, is self-shining, is also present. Same thing is present in every vritti. That was, you know, Ramana's big awakening, was recognizing I don't really need to be in nirvikalpa samadhi because, like opening and closing my eyes, it doesn't harm or change my being in any way. But that's what needs to be recognized and differentiated. So nirvikalpa, so let me just finish. The savikalpa and nirvikalpa, when I go initially into contemplation, the mind, the nama-rupa, the mind, the sattva, is still present. At the same time, it is, though it's present, it has no other content, right? The nirvikalpa is when the content overwhelms the perception or the awareness or the cognition of the presence of the mind. Now, when I come out of that condition, like just like when I come out of the deep sleep, the mind can tell me all about that. But there's no voice. In nirvikalpa, there just is me without a labeler. In deep sleep, there is me plus this ajnanam. So the nirvikalpa samadhi situation is very different, experientially very different than the deep sleep. Because in the deep sleep, the mind is in its avyakta condition. It resolves into its own material, you know, into the maya. In the nirvikalpa samadhi, the mind absorbs into the atma. So one's absorbing into the maya, one's absorbing into the atma. So it's very different. Both minds come out. One awake mind that's absorbed in the atma comes into duality and then talks about it. The deep sleep mind, the mind that's resolved into deep sleep, comes out and then talks about it. They're talking about two different conditions. You're never going to say, oh, I just realized that the deep sleep is nirvikalpa samadhi. Now that I've been in nirvikalpa samadhi, that's the deep... No, they're totally different.
Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to clarify, just to be totally sure. There's two, you know, whenever you go into this description, there's the language that we always use, which is, I need to differentiate my, you know, in order to...
The mind needs to.
That I always refers to the mind, right? When we say I...
I can say the mind needs to differentiate...
Itself.
...the atma from itself from the self.
And then the same thing when you say I need to focus on the... I focus on the luminary, the mind focuses on the luminary.
Yes, that's right.
Those eyes always refer to the mind. And then the other thing is with the differentiation between the savikalpa and nirvikalpa samadhi, it's only a differentiation in the state of the mind,
yes,
at what level the mind is at.
Absolutely.
So whenever we talk, you know, this used to be, and this is untangling for me now.
Yeah, yeah.
But whenever we used to talk about, you know, the mind versus the self in the state of samadhi,
it's not like there are two, because the self is always there, it's always the same, and it's just the state of the mind. It's not even relative to the self, it's just the state of the mind.
That's right. That's true. It's, yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely, that's right.
But to what extent can you talk about Nirvikalpa Samadhi as non-duality? Because, I mean, it's something that you go into, which is obviously contrary to the idea of...
No, that's excellent. That's perfect. It's a perfect question. See, in the end, what you need to understand is I am Ishvara. I am the whole. And that I am the whole is a Dvaita. That means that you recognize that all of this, the whole manifest creation, all that manifests in duality, is mitya. Right? It has no substance away from consciousness. It is only consciousness. That's Vedanta. That's non-duality. Now, the nature of the Atma, which is Brahman, which is limitless, is non-dual in the sense that it has no parts within itself, right? So it's one without a second within itself, just pure consciousness. And so it can, that pure consciousness, which is not objectifiable, which can't be changed, you know, in any way, is free from time, in the teaching methodology, needs to be differentiated from you as a jiva. Differentiated means in reference to you, your body, mind, sense organs. You can start with this. I need to recognize the satyam mitya in reference to my own personal experience. It's called the tvam pada. I need to recognize the nature of tvam, of you, right? The nature of you. You are also satyam mitya. The satyam is the atma, and the mitya is the body, mind, sense organs, and everything that you perceive. And so, once the satyam, the atma, has been recognized, this is one thread of teaching methodology. Once the non-objectifiable atma, yourself, has been differentiated, then that has implications in reference to the relationship of conscious, my conscious being, to the rest of the world, because what itself, that which itself has no parts and is non-objectifiable, is itself not subject to any kind of division. You're left in a situation where now you have one non-objectifiable self, which cannot be the body, mind, sense organs, and the universe. Right? And everybody's left in that situation: one non-objectifiable self and the universe. So now the question comes, is what is the relationship of this one non-objectifiable me to this universe? Is it me and the universe? You know? So what is the reality of the universe? And upon analysis, the same relationship, satya-mitya relationship that is true to you, the individual, is true to the universe and the individual, and individual self. And that's where the Advaita comes in. The Advaita can't... There's no Advaita if there isn't a satyamitya between the entire manifest creation and the Atma. But you have to... You can't look at Ishvara and say, I'll look at the all-pervasive existence. Look at the all-pervasive consciousness. Because Satchit, consciousness, which is existence, is not something you can look at. It's non-objectifiable. It simply is self-evident, and it is the truth of your being. And as the truth of your being, then through unfoldment you recognize it is the truth of the whole creation, which means the whole creation has a self. You know, and then this whole creation then becomes manifest knowledge, and that's where Ishvara comes in.
So that being the case, you can't talk about Nirvikalpa Samadhi from the point of view of Vedanta as non-duality?
No.
That's just a state.
Because Nirvikalpa Samadhi is a state of mind. Mind goes into Nirvikalpa Samadhi.
Yeah, because you know, in essence, that is the goal of yoga.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
And
that's the end goal of yoga. Yeah. And that's why in yoga, yoga adopts Sankhya. And Sankhya says that every individual has their own Purusha, has their own Atma.
But it's interesting, though, because arguments can be made and have been made that that you can have a sort of non-dual understanding of yoga, and this is something I'm going for at the moment, but it doesn't seem to be possible. People have made that case. But it doesn't really matter.
What they talk about in yoga is the non-dual nature, internal nature of the purusha.
Yeah.
It's limitless, you know, non-dual consciousness within itself.
Yes, it's a different kind of non-dual. This is the problem I'm having.
It's a different kind of non-dual. That's why
people aren't differentiating and discriminating different kinds of non-duality.
No, do you know what? I do this. I do classes at school in non-duality. One, Advaita Vedanta non-duality, and another one called Non-Dual Perspectives in Spiritual Counseling. The first thing I do in the first class is have everybody define their meaning of non-duality.
Yeah.
So that we can understand. And then I spend a lot of time talking about how this word non-duality is used.
Well, this
it's a buzzword now. It's very
As at the conference, and all I was thinking the whole time was no one's distinguishing anything. Everyone's talking about different things. Everyone's totally confused and confusing other people.
Yeah.
And when I was thinking about it, what came into my head was the first class that I took with you, where it was like, hey, let's sit down and say what everyone means. And I just wanted to say that.
Are you talking about that science and non-duality?
Yeah,
that's what that guy Ed just came from. He's so confused.
Oh, Dan, you mean.
Dan. He said, he was sitting on my deck and he goes, you know.
Talking about me?
No, I'm sorry. He says, because he was sitting where you were sitting. He said, I still feel like this is my body and mind. I said, well, it is your body and mind, and you will always feel like it's your body. You know, like he thought he was supposed to have some kind of experience.
Exactly, like the Atma is out floating out here somewhere, and we have to reach it and have an experience.
He was confused.
But these are the normal things to be confused about. These are the things that have to be straightened out. Yeah.
But they get more confused going to those non-duality things.
I have just a little question. The consciousness and awareness is self-effulgent and self-evident. And I'm wondering, does that create an experience? Is there some affect of experience there? Or how should you look at that?
It is, Edward. The thing is that like why Swamiji and we tend to always avoid the word experience is because the way we define in our mind experience is I am having an experience of something. And when we use the word experience, it has the sense of I have an experience, the experience comes and goes. But the confusion is when we negate the word experience in reference to the self, then a person can think, oh, the self is there, but I never experience it.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So that's it, problematic itself. So that's why instead of experience, we say it is self-evident. Or you can carefully use the word experience is that it's the self-experience that underlines all experience that never comes and goes. In other words, in every experience that you have, now another way of saying it, in every vritti, in every thought modification that you have, there is a constant. And the constant is the sat-chit. Right? That sat-chit, the conscious existence, is equally and pervasively present as the very content of every thought modification that you have. Thought modification includes all emotions, anything that's going on, anything that is known to you.
Okay.
So you can even say, like, any object of knowledge, whether it be a mental object, like an emotion or an emotion or a memory or an imagination or a perceptual object gained through the sense organs, any knowledge that you have has as the very satyam, the very truth of it, the very being of it, sat-chit, conscious being. And consciousness, which is being, is never wavers. So what we call the anuvritti. It is which is absolutely fully present as the very self, changeless self of every experience that you have. And you notice that just within samsara, just within yourself as a jiva within the world, I had this experience, and I had this experience, I had this experience, I had this experience. The I remains as the constant. The experiences all come and go. But the I, your sense of self, is not a non-experience as though it's some inertness.
Well, that's where I'm interested. Yeah. Is there any kind of quality to that? Or
the quality of it is the non-objectifiable presence of yourself that is there in every experience. It's the me. When you say, like if I say, you know, I am here, you know, or there is a couch, you know, and here I am, you know, your mind is labeling you. It's not like, here I am, but I don't know where that is. When you say, if I am feeling, I am thinking, I am seeing, right? Yesterday I did this, today I am doing that. That word I, that we call the ahankara, is always referring to the constant. The one who was there yesterday is the one who is here today. The one who had this thought, this is the pratibhijna. The one who had that thought is the one who's having this thought. The one who was here yesterday is the one who's here now. The one who slept is the one who's awake. So you are labeling your own presence.
Yeah, so the quality of labeling my own presence is like, the quality is like, I am timeless, I am constant, I am whole.
Yeah.
Those are the qualities of the experience of
Oh, well, let me put it this
right?
way. Only if those words are used in teaching to say, you are timeless. Okay? Say in the teaching, I say, you are timeless. But if you're all just coming to class and I say, you know, welcome everybody. you are timeless. You know?
No, I'm not talking that.
No, but what I'm saying, that I'm making an important point here.
Okay.
The word timeless the meaning of the word timeless has to be revealed through teaching so that it can land on that which is timeless. In this creation, there is nothing timeless. You know, so if we're using the word timeless, because such a word exists, right? We're using the word timeless. We're using it relatively within a time-bound creation.
Okay.
When we use the word timeless in reference to the Atma, we mean there is no time, that the presence that you are is changeless. It has never progressed. It has never come into being, done a little jig and gone out of being. It is what it is. It's free of time. It illumines time. That's what we mean by timeless. And so that word, to be able to say, I am timeless, can only be said in a meaningful way through the teaching where your mind has differentiated and recognized the timeless, differentiated it from the time bound. Then the word means something. Now say you say it's the same. If you say, I am whole,
yeah.
What does that mean? I am consciousness. What does that mean? Each one of these words become a word for nididhyasana, contemplation, where you can say, you know, I am consciousness, or I am shanti, or I am whole, or I am
tons.
I am effulgent. But that it only...
When we get to a good spot somewhere.
Penny? Well, I couldn't figure out how to answer it.
It's like a cross.
You're spoiled. Be quiet.
No. You have a short trip here.
Okay, I apologize. I take it all back.
They're in the class to me.
Yeah,
I want them to hear.
I know
you know. Penny, are you there? Ugh. Oh, I know. I'm using the wrong thing.
Wrong ass.
Yes, it's the wrong thing. There's no end to this. It's a bad day. It's a bad karma.
But we had very good spells. I don't think
for
a bad day.
It's a good class, but
yeah.
Not good for Penny and Shri and Michael.
The technical end is challenging.
The technical end is challenging.
Content is great.
Danny, are you on? Alright.
Is this me or you?
This is Matt.
This is me. No, this is you.
Are you different?
Do I do? Do I do? First, you're differentiated.
They are?
Where were we?
I've been timeless.
No, it's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah, you have to do the contemplation or else throwing around words like timelessness and timelessness.
They don't mean anything. So those words have to resolve in the fact. In the fact of your being. You know, that's the teaching really. Is if the word actually lands on your being, where the word then means something, right? Then you have knowledge. Because you've differentiated. It's not just a word floating out there in space.
But Karen, any of these things, to say timeless, to say, you know, or to say what is the quality of the self, these are all just so, you know, to help the mind be happy or appreciate it. And it's consciousness is just consciousness.
Consciousness doesn't need to be liberated. It's the mind that has a problem.
Right.
It's all the what's going on in Maya has a problem.
Yeah.
You know, the mind is Maya. Sense organs are Maya. Jiva is Maya. The whole Jiva concept. The truth of the Jiva is Atma. There is really no Jiva.
But, you know, this thing that Swamiji said to me that was so... But it keeps coming back to me, where I said to him, the Swamiji, Ishwara is Mitya. And he said, no, Ishwara is Brahman. Ishwara Twam is Mitya. And then I was confused.
Yeah, okay. Like, what he means by that.
Yeah. But, I mean, in the end he said, and he got so clear with me, he goes, the table is Brahman. Tableness is Mitya. Ah. And so what I felt he was saying is, if this is Brahman, but if I go, oh, okay, no, but it's a thing to hold the TV, but, you know, it's like the name. It's like the name, I'm naming it, I'm ascribing a purpose to it, I'm like sort of names within names, you know, I'm giving it a name and a purpose, but it's really Brahman. I mean, that's what I took him to mean.
You know, when you say the twum,
yeah.
I mean, when you say twum, that affix, it means the essence of something. Mm-hmm. So if you say, you know, you can say, Ishwara is Brahman. Everything. The chair is Brahman.
Right.
I am Brahman.
Right.
There is nothing which isn't Brahman.
Right.
But say if you give to Ishwara, Ishwara Twam, that means that the truth of Ishwara resolves into Ishwara. The essence of Ishwara is Ishwara. The essence of the table is the table.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or the chair is the chair.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Twam. That's the ness.
Mm-hmm.
When you add Twam onto a word, it means it's essential nature. So the essential nature of Ishwara is not Ishwara. The essential nature of Ishwara is Brahman.
I know, but he was saying that the Twam was the Mitya. That's what...
It is the Mitya. That's exactly right.
Oh.
That's why he said, if you can say Ishwara... No, Ishwara is Brahman.
Yeah.
But Ishwara Twam
is the
Mitya.
Yeah.
Because the Ishwara Twam is... Then you're saying that Ishwara is Ishwara.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that the reality of Ishwara is Ishwara. The reality of the chair is the chair.
Yes.
The reality of the chair is Brahman. The reality of Ishwara is Brahman.
But that almost seems like just language. Just, I mean, if you know, you know. But these are more like language.
But the whole teaching is language, right?
It's not like you don't she doesn't understand, or that you.
No, but no. Wait a minute. I don't think she understood what Ishwara Twam meant. That doesn't mean she doesn't understand. She didn't understand, you didn't understand the Ishwara, what Swamiji meant by Ishwara Twam in the way that I understood what he meant by Ishwara Twam.
Yeah.
It's not a comment on understanding.
No. It's just that it seems like it's necessary, but we spend, like, keep saying, you know, we spend a lot of time on the same, okay, this is what I mean by this word.
We do.
Yeah, I know.
And the reason, but wait a minute. The reason we have to do that is that all the words that we use are defined in our mind as within duality. We don't have words that themselves contain Brahman, right? We don't have any such words. That's the whole teaching methodology. If you're going to be using words, the only reason we can use words is because what we're talking about is here. If what we're talking about isn't here, then words would just give indirect knowledge.
Yeah.
Right? But what we're talking about, which is the self, is here, is present, is self-evident, but because of ignorance has been confused with the Maya. And so words need, you really only have words to use as lakshanas, as pointers, right? And the reason the words can be used as pointers is because the thing that you're pointing out is here to be pointed out.
But yeah. Hearing the words isn't enough.
No, hearing the words is not enough. The words have to be handled in such a way as to point to make the mind recognize something that is present, which is yourself.
But that's hearing the words.
It is hearing the words, but it's not. That's why I say it's not enough to say for the teacher to come and say, "You are Brahman, you are infinite, you are the self of the whole creation, and you are Ananda." So you have no problem. You are liberated, right?
Yeah.
Those words, and that's why in Vakyavritti, that text we did several years ago, in the very beginning, the teacher starts teaching, just gives one or two shlokas, verses, and the student stops him and says, "Wait a minute. I can't understand at all what you're saying. Unless you really define for me what you're meaning by each one of the words. What do you mean by twam? You know? What do you mean by this? What do you mean by that? Otherwise, I don't know what you're talking about." And then the whole Vakyavritti unfolds, because the Vakyavritti is has to do with that which has to be said. That's Vakya. You know, that which needs to be revealed. You know? And so the whole teaching methodology is said there. So you use words, but the words have to be handled in such a way to help you to see what's there to be seen. That's how the words are used. They're used as a pramana. That's why we say the Upanishads are a pramana. They're a means of knowledge.
Look, in terms of like atma and the vrittis, we say, you know, atma lights up the vrittis, present to the vrittis, you know, the content of the vrittis changes. But truthfully, isn't it also that atma is actually not only lights up the vritti, but is all pervasive to the vritti, and that's how it's known that everything is Brahman. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's why we say it's the sat-chit of the vritti. That's why the satyamitya. Yeah. That's why clay pot.
Right. But in some sense, see, to me, satyamitya, it almost brings up that banana and banana peel thing of Swamiji's, you know, where you eat the banana and you throw away the peel and then you slip on the peel. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? So maybe I'll don't, but anyway. So for me, like to kind of more like focus on like that I as Atma am all pervasive to the vritti is more useful than making this such a mitya distinction, which to me makes almost like a duality.
Yeah.
If you know what I'm saying. I mean, it's like, okay, I am the Atma, changeless Atma, everything else is mitya. And now I've created two things. Whereas in reality, I know the mitya through vrittis, and I pervade the vritti. Or am I wrong? Or is that just too out there?
No, it's just... Even what you've just said is a big problem.
Is it? Okay.
Because you pervade the vritti. That's dual. You have to be the self of the vritti.
Yeah.
But when you say, "I pervade the vritti," that's a teaching methodology that then you have to modify. Because even the word, "I pervade the vritti," then there's a vritti to be pervaded.
So that's this witness problem.
Yeah.
The witness.
I don't understand that, actually. "I pervade the vritti,"
because
that's a problem.
Well, it's not a problem for you, okay? You're not having a problem with it.
Right.
I have a problem with it. And so you're going to have to correct my problem.
But I'm disturbed that you have a problem.
She were your student.
No, listen.
No, but
wait a minute. Let me finish. Like you're saying, you're using these words that are very clear for you when you say, "I pervade the vritti."
Yeah.
Then I'm going to come back and say, if I pervade the vritti, that's dual. Because I am pervading a vritti.
Yeah. No, but I was I was trying to get clear with you as you being the teacher and me being the student and me saying to you, this is my experience. Is this correct? I'm not trying to say, I wouldn't necessarily try to teach from that.
Listen, but if you're saying it and you're asking me, is it correct? I would have to say, it depends on how I hear it. If I'm just listening to you and thinking that you mean that you pervade the vritti, there's a self that is pervading an object vritti, then that's a problem. Mm. Now, you can say the same problem that you're bringing up to me, that when we're trying to do drik drisha viveka, seer seeing differentiation, then we do a subject-object differentiation, and then I become the knower,
right,
of the object. But as we go through, you have to remember, it starts like that. That's why we have the word in the teaching methodology, we have the word sakshi. Sakshi means witness. You get to the point of the body, the mind, the sense organs, the ahankara, space, all of your knowledge and ignorance, all being objects, objectifiable. And you get to the place where you have there's the witness, the consciousness, which is differentiated from everything that enjoys really the knower known, exists within the knower known duality, the body, the mind, the sense organs. Now you're left with awareness. Now the question is, and we call the awareness initially as a sakshi. Mm-hmm. Hello? So we're left with a sakshi. Mm-hmm. Now the next part comes in, is the sakshi a sakshi? Right? We get there, then you have to ask, is the sakshi a sakshi? What means of knowledge does it have to engage in subject-object knower-known duality? Because subject-object requires the mind, the sense organs. Those all exist within maya. And so now you, through unfoldment, you get to this recognition, the sakshi is not really a sakshi. It's just such shit, right? And so now this mind, which is illumined, the sense organs, which are illumined, the body, which is illumined, the universe, which is illumined, what is its relationship to such shit? You know, which you can start out by saying pervades. But you start out with that. It pervades. It illumines. It pervades all of this type of thing. But when you start analyzing what is illumined, what is pervaded, is there a second thing there to be illumined, to be pervaded? There we can't find a second thing that has any substance. And this is when now maya, mitya, and that whole unfoldment comes in. Mm-hmm. So just like when you say the one who illumines, the one who knows, the one who pervades, that's in the middle of the unfoldment. Once you get to the analysis of what is actually here, you find there's no second thing to be pervaded. There's no second thing that has any type of existence, right? And so then the satyam mitya is available for your understanding. As long as there's a real second thing or a subject object, pervader, illuminer, you know, all these type of words, then the job's not done yet, right? But the differentiation has to be made in the sense that when you have to start with where the student comes with being a knower, a seer, an experiencer, being a subject in the world, being an object. What has to happen is, first of all, the subject has the what had been taken to be the subject has to be recognized as part of the object. And then you have to say, well, this body, mind, sense organs is part of the object illumined by a subject. And then you have to say, okay, now there's one subject illuminating one object. What is this object? Is the object, what is the relationship between this object, the universe, and the subject? Is there dvaita there? So then this has to be unfolded. The nature of the universe has to be unfolded so that you can get to the satya mitya. And there's different pathways to do that. You see what I mean?
So in a way, is it like you start with a red hot iron ball, then you differentiate the fire from the weight of the iron, and then you finally go back to the unity of the red hot iron ball, where, you know, but with the understanding that you have appreciated the difference, but they all coexist. They,
in a sense, like the red hot iron ball. With that example, the and every example is limited. Here's the limitation of that one. The fire and the iron ball are two different things.
Right.
Right. And they're the same order of reality.
Right.
So that's limitation.
Right.
But what that Drishtanta illustration is meant to show is that if you don't know fire and iron, mm-hmm. when the two are appearing as one, you think that all the qualities of the one is the qualities of the other and vice versa. And so they have to be differentiated. So you need to recognize fire as fire and iron as iron. And then when they're together, it's no problem.
Right.
And so here it's the same in the sense of here's this creation, this objectifiable creation that includes the body, mind, sense organs, and here's me, consciousness. When I understand this creation as mitya, as Ishvara, and I understand myself as satyam, then when they're together, it is no problem.
Right.
I recognize the sat, my being, and I recognize the mitya. You know? The mitya doesn't in any way impose itself on the satyam. I know what satyam is, I know what mitya is. And so though the two are together, in a sense, if we can use this, but we're acknowledging mitya, we're acknowledging maya. So acknowledging maya, the two are existing in the same time and space. Right? And so I have differentiated, you know, what lasts and what doesn't. What is the substance and what is the maya?
Well, the truth of the mitya is satyam.
Yes.
Yeah, and that really, maybe I'm wrong.
Why don't you say like this, the truth of the maya is Brahman.
Okay.
Then when you say that, then you say, what is the order of reality? If the truth of this whole creation is Brahman, you know, then what are the different orders of reality? Mm-hmm. Because if the truth of this whole thing is one non-dual Brahman, then what is this? What order of reality is this? We say this is mitya. What is mitya? Mm. Mitya is that which totally depends for its being on whatever is satyam. That's mitya. Yeah. Okay? And so this whole creation is mitya. Brahman is satyam. Right?
But the way that's known, just as for an individual, for like a jivan mukta or something, is just... Is because of thoughts, right? I mean, because of you perceive the mitya reality.
Mitya perceives mitya. Yeah.
Right, with a thought, right?
A thought is mitya, sense organs are mitya.
Right.
The ahankara is mitya.
Right, right, I know that. But to know that the truth of it is Brahman is really seen as a thought. And it's not as a thought of...
A thought removes the ignorance.
Right, right. That I understand. I guess I can't express that. That's okay. I talked to Terry about this at the ashram, and I think he and I was able to explain to him that. But I guess I'm having trouble explaining that.
Well, a thought is involved in gaining self-knowledge because a thought removes the ignorance, right?
But that I know. But I mean, like, as a Gyani's walking around, like once Esther said to me when she was teaching me, she said, I'm walking around in myself. So that was clearly knowledge for her, that she was walking around in herself.
But you know what she means by that is that the body, mind, sense organs walking around in Ishvara, right? The body, mind, sense organs is walking around in Ishvara, all of which is her being,
right.
Which is the truth of both the subject and the object.
Yeah.
So she's having an experience as a jiva walking around in Ishvara.
Yeah.
The self of the jiva is the self of Ishvara.
Right.
And so wherever she goes, it is only herself.
Right.
As the Atma, which is the truth of the Ishvara also.
But that can only be known
by seeing the truth of the thought, in a sense. The truth of every vritti, of every thought, of every... I'm not just talking about the knowledge,
well,
I'm talking about the truth of the thought.
See, once... Once the self-ignorance is removed, the self as it is recognized no matter what the vritti.
Yeah.
You don't need to bring in the knowledge again.
No.
Right. So once knowledge takes place, your self has been differentiated as the constant of every experience. Mm-hmm. So whatever the thoughts are, whatever the emotions are, the constant is changeless, you know? And so, say you recognize the constant as it's non-objectifiable, you know? There's no experience ever that's away from it. And so wherever you go, the one who's going is the body, mind, sense organs, is going within the Maya, right? But the whole Maya itself has for its being me. And so that me is invariable. So wherever I go, whatever I think, whatever I feel, there I am. So we use that example of walking around in myself. But you don't think it's the Atma walking around in myself.
No.
I know you don't think that, but it's just a way of saying both the subject and the object. This body, mind, sense organs being considered as the subject and the world being considered as the object. Right? Both exist and are illumined by my being. Ugh. This is an interesting class. Let's do meditation.
Meditation?
Just to say our prayer. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.